Good morning. It's good to have all of you with us this morning. Just a couple of things to note. We are trying to hardwire our feed, and so if you have experienced some difficulties, just be patient with us because we're working through that. This is a new layer to what it is that we're trying to do so that you get a more consistent feed as opposed to things that jump or disappear for a little bit and then come back on because of the wireless. So thank you, Austin, for your hard work, and Brian for doing that, but we're working through that right now. So with that in mind, the other thing I want to mention to you as well is that we are looking at, I have to talk to our board and elders, but we are looking at the first part of June about considering restarting our worship services. So we will keep you posted, so keep that in mind, be praying about that. We will put into place whatever we need to make sure that it's not only productive and celebratory, but safe as well. So just be thinking about the first part of June, praying about that so that we can all be back together as a church family here in this building and on our beautiful property. So we're looking forward to that time. Today is Mother's Day, and so we want to thank all of you, for those of you who are our mothers. And, you know, when you have a Mother's Day, for me, one of the great challenges is always to talk about this in a way that is not perfunctory or patronizing or whatever. So, and I would say by extension, that should be true of all of us, that that Mother's Day obligates us, but that doesn't mean that when we celebrate Mother's Day, we should make people who are mothers feel that we are obligated to them in that way, that it really is a special day that we want to say thank you to those moms in our lives who have made our life so very special. So I'm going to be talking then about Mother's Day, and I'm going to be covering a number of different things as it relates to that. I don't think I can get through everything as it relates to that, but I will try because I want to really impress upon us how vitally crucial Mother's Day is as an institution or as part of an institution within the overall world in which we live, the created world in which God has given to us. So Bree read to us this morning Proverbs 31. And Proverbs 31 is oftentimes used as one of the primary texts for talking about Mother's Day. So but I want to give you just a little bit of background about that first, because it's got to be a fair reading when it comes to Mother's Day as you use that text. So in Proverbs 31, the woman presented here is that of a wealthy aristocrat who runs a household estate with servants, and conducts business affairs, real estate, tends to vineyards and merchandise, as well as domestic affairs and charity. She is presented as an idealized wife, as well as a final contrast to a symbol of wisdom. So she's presented as a symbol of wisdom to her children, to her spouse, and to her community. And this is in opposition to other women that are described in the book of Proverbs, really throughout the book of Proverbs, who are women of folly, who do not live according to God's law, who are not devoted and dedicated to their families. So, and so in that way, this woman described in Proverbs 31 is idealized. Now, when we take a fair reading of Proverbs 31, as a common Mother's Day text, here's some things that we need to keep in mind that are really important. Number one, go ahead and advance that a little bit. There we go. Yep. It's a text that counterculturally elevates the role of a woman in a largely repressive and dominant patriarchal world. And so this text is unique. You would not find this kind of a text in ancient literature very much at all. women were oftentimes regarded as property. They did not share the same kind of status that their husbands would share in any sort of way. And so this particular text is countercultural. It's utterly unique in terms of what you might read in ancient literature in the past, because the world at that time was largely repressive and dominated by men in such a way that women were very subordinate and very much second-class citizens. That's not how Proverbs 31 reads. Number two, that it provides a complementary and comprehensive view for women within the family institution. So she's not just a woman who has children. She's not just a woman who is a spouse. But there are a whole host of other things that she does that are wonderful. Things that she's responsible for, that there's a lot to it, that she's entrusted with much, and so she complements her husband, and the work that she does is much bigger than what the work that is described for many women at that time. So. Excuse me. Just as sort of a rabbit trail then, it's important to understand that the purpose of the believer is the practice and maintenance, protection, and restoration of all biblical institutions. So when we live as believers in the world in which we live, God has established certain institutions. And what I mean by institution, I mean a structure out of or from which things function. That's what I mean by an institution. So when God created the world, he gave us five primary institutions, the first of which is the created order itself, that we live in the created order. We need the created order to live in. And if we abuse the created order, then it will abuse us. Number two, worship. That God established a system of worship to give him honor and glory, to be connected to him, to be dependent upon him. So it's not just worship in the sense that we have a temple or a church that we worship out of, but it's this idea of worthiness. Everything is attributed to God. And you might say, well, there are a lot of people who don't worship. And I would say there are a lot of people who don't worship God, but they worship something. So worship is innate. In the same way that the created order in which we live is innate, it has to exist for us to exist. There are certain things that we have to say, this is worthy enough for me to devote my life to, and that's what I will do. And so we are hardwired for that. That is the second institution. The third is the Sabbath, rest, the idea of rest. That it can't always be work. It can't always be no sleep. It can't always be no relaxation. Rest or the Sabbath was the third institution that God created. The fourth is government or the idea of rule. That we have to live according to a set of laws, whether they are natural laws or physical laws or moral laws. There are laws by which we all have to. And so the idea of law or rule is an institution that God introduced to us when he created the world. And the fifth one is this, the idea of family, marriage, motherhood, fatherhood. But family is an institution. And the idea of marriage and children and spouses are all a part of that institution. For civilizations to exist and to function, you have to have family. You have to have a mother and a father. Somebody has to be the father who participates in the giving in giving birth or the process of giving birth to children. Someone has to be responsible for birthing the child. Someone has to be responsible for an organizing structure in which children are raised and connected with each other, that they are raised with a sense of law, with a sense of respect, with a sense of well-being, all of those kinds of things. That is the fifth institution that God gave to us. And so what I want to say to you today is that motherhood is a primary piece of one of the most important institutions that God has ever given to us. Take away any one of those institutions and we fail. Compromise them and we are compromised. So these institutions are that important. And the idea of a mother within the institution of family is absolutely crucial. So in whatever way we honor that mother, that we lift her up, even as an idea, even in an idealized fashion, so that we aim for something that might be greater than any one person might be, that's still so vitally important. That we cannot underplay, we can't diminish the role and the importance of motherhood within this vital institution that we know and call family. So in light of that then, in Proverbs 31, there are three primary ways in which the role of a woman was played itself out in the life of the family. And this is part of that fairer reading, right? Because I suppose I've been guilty of this myself, but oftentimes we read Proverbs 31 only with the lens of this woman is only a mother. But in reality, she was much more than that, but not independent of that, right? So, A, women have equal but different roles with men and their husbands. So when you read Proverbs 31, you can see clearly that women have different roles than their husbands, but they were equal roles. And they complemented each other. It's very clear here in Proverbs 31. B, women play a vital and necessary leadership cog within the community. So here's this woman who is an icon of wisdom and compassion, being a vital part of the community, helping, administering aid, and not just, you know, giving her hand to the poor, but being a source of wisdom as well. And so women have equal but different roles with men and their husbands, according to Proverbs 31. And women play a vital and necessary leadership cog within the community as well. And those two are not independent of each other. They, in fact, are supposed to be connected to one another. So she's not just a mom. She's not just a leader in the community or in her work within the community. She's both of those. C, women are profoundly the only vessel through which family, society, and the human species can be perpetuated by giving birth to children. They're the only ones that can. Men cannot do this. In fact, I like to say it would be easier for women. If you only had women, it'd probably be easier to perpetuate the human species than if only you had men. So out of that then, when we think of these three things, that these three ways in which women are a woman is presented in Proverbs 31, God designed each of those three roles to be interdependent. That while they can be expressed individually, they should not be independent of one another. That you can be both a partner, an equal partner, you can be a leader, whether it's in the community or at work, and you can also bear children as well. All of these things that idealized woman was able to do. So she was equal in partnership. She was a community leader. Even when she not only was within the community in terms of how she helped, but she clearly, she had some kind of a job where she bought fields. She sold goods. So she did those things in terms of work as well. And she was also the source of life and birth. So I just want to reiterate how radical this would have been in the ancient world, this idea that a woman could be elevated in this manner. Excuse me. I'm sorry, I'm embarrassed. I'm coughing like that. I apologize. So these roles then, as the woman, these roles then, as described by King Lemuel, they were so significant. They were so important. They were so highly regarded by by families and by priests and scribes within the Jewish faith that Proverbs 31 was recited every Friday night before the Sabbath. So it was recited because the daughters who were listening as it was recited in that way so that they would ascribe to be like that, so that they would be women who would have those kinds of virtues, who would be confident enough to be co-partners with their spouses, who would be confident enough and resourceful enough and resolute enough to be leaders within the community as they bought and sold fields or goods or helped people who were needed to be helped or who were oppressed. It was recited to young women so that they would see the honor and the virtue of being able to bear children for their families. It was that significant. But it was also recited for men because the parents wanted their sons to want that kind of woman of virtue. Now, those of us who are older, who have had children, who maybe have gotten married, like I know in terms of my sons, that's the kind of woman that I wanted my son to pursue. That you don't settle for women who settle, and women don't settle for men who settle for something less. That it's perfectly okay to pursue a life mate, a partner, a husband, a wife, who's the higher fruit in the tree and not the low-hanging fruit of the tree or the fruit that's lying on the ground. That we should want the very best for our children, and our children should want the very best for themselves. And so these three things that King Lemuel outlines in the Proverbs 31 says, ladies, women, be these things. Co-partner with your spouse and don't embarrass him, and he shouldn't embarrass you. Take on leadership roles within the community, in your churches. Help people who need to be helped. Make wonderful contributions to your family. Co-partner with your spouse in that way. And be proud, be excited about the fact that you have this wonderful ability to procreate, to produce children, so that your family can grow and your communities can grow. And if they are people of virtue like Proverbs 31 outlines, then those communities will be good communities. And the world in which we live will become a better world. It has this reverberating kind of element to it. Now, keeping all of this in mind, I want to say this, that the God-ordained and sacred institution of motherhood is culturally diminishing, and it is a calling that is under attack. You see, there are people in our world today. So, you know, last week I spent the first part of John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And I spoke on I am the truth, part A, and I'm going to speak on I am the truth, part B next Sunday. But it seems to me that that part of what I'm talking to you is an element of this whole idea of truth, about the truth of family, the truth of motherhood. And that truth is very much under attack within the culture in which we live. So many, not all, but many feminists today, and they use this word, many feminists today are offended by the fecundity of their fellow women. The word fecundity means to be able to procreate, to produce children. They're offended by the fecundity of their fellow women. They feel like that when women have children, that they have given up on their feminism. They have given up on their careers and things like that. So they're offended by it. And so there's pressure in the professional world not to have children, because you are giving up and you are submitting yourself to the patriarchy, and you are allowing yourself to be pressed under their thumb because you can't be a leader in the community. You can't be a successful businesswoman and still have children, right? Like Proverbs 31 addresses. Well, yes, you can. But sometimes, you know, when we talk about mothers, the whole institution is under attack because of how we have changed our idea of what motherhood is, or what motherhood could be, or what a woman can be. So, for example, there are these distinctions now that are no longer distinctions. So I just ran across these articles recently where a transgender man has given birth to his non-binary partner using a donation by another transgender woman. So if you can follow this, right? So this person was originally a woman who transgendered to be a male. That person's spouse was a male who transgendered to be a woman, right? And between the both of them, they went out and found another person to donate so that the woman who transgendered into a male could give birth. Now, I mean, if you can follow that, right? If you can follow that, I mean, it's just crazy. So it says here, her name is Mrs. Rodriguez, was born a man named Lewis and said, we live as a man and woman. He said, I am a trans feminine woman. And Fernando is a trans masculine male. Then probably one of the greatest understatements this year that I've heard, they say, the process to get here was complex for each of us. I can't begin to imagine. But here's what you need to understand, that within the world in which we live, this kind of stuff is not only pursued, it is celebrated. These people were courageous people, you see. So I have other articles that I could read, and I don't have time. But I just want to say to you that these kinds of things are becoming less and less exceptional. And this person, whatever this person is, this transgender male who was a man, no, this transgender female who was a female who became a man, decided they wanted to have kids. And that child is born into this family. And somehow, they have to make sense out of all that. Now, there are some psychologists who say that's perfectly normal, and that child certainly can do that. But there's other data out there that seems to run counter to that. And if I have a chance, I'll share some of that with you. So here's my thing today that I want to make clear to you. That one of the reasons why this is so important to talk about, why Mother's Day is so important to talk about, because when we celebrate Mother's Day, we affirm, we celebrate, we reestablish, we push back on the culture, because we are again affirming one of the primary institutions that God has given to humanity and to the world in which we live, in that of family, and as a part of that family, a subset of a biological woman who gives birth to children to perpetuate the family, the society, and the species. When you are a mother, when you are a woman and a mother, you affirm that great and vital institution that God created. When we play games with our bodies, when we say to ourselves, I just want to be whatever I want to be, and people should let me be whatever I want to be, and if that involves children, it shouldn't matter, that runs counter to the great institutions that God has given to us when He created the world in which we live. It runs counter to that. So all of this comes out of this emerging idea within our culture. And I hate to get philosophical on Mother's Day, but you have to understand that when I was praying about what to speak about this morning, I just want to say this to you, that it certainly is affirming to talk about women giving birth to children and the significance, the sacredness, the importance of that. But bigger picture, women, when you give birth to children, you are participating in this enormous thing that God has given the world in which we live, called the institution of family. You are reaffirming, you are validating, you are building this, building upon this foundation of God creating the institution of the family itself. There are five. And without you, number five disappears. You are that significant. You are that powerful. And that you can do all that while still co-partnering with your parent, with your spouse, and by still being a leader within your community and your work. Now, I do want to say that all of those things hold in balance. That one should not be sacrificed for the other. And if you have to sacrifice more for one than the other, then any time we have children, we have reprioritized our life. And we must then reorganize our life in such a way that we must do what we must do for our children so that they are raised properly, healthily, in that way. And most of the moms that I know do exactly that. So if you want to celebrate Mother's Day today, please, by all means, celebrate what being the person that has a mother. Celebrate being the person that is a mother, and whether you are a mother of your own children, whether you have adopted children, whether you are a surrogate mother of sorts. The kind of mother that, the kind of woman that, you may not have children yourself, but you teach Sunday school, you teach kids club, you teach in the school system, and as a woman, in so many ways, you mother those children. And you add to their lives. And what you do in that way should never be diminished. Having said all that, celebrate the fact that we have children in some capacity. But also celebrate the fact that you women, support one of the great five institutions of the created order. And without you, it all disappears. And the rest of it becomes meaningless.